We are going to be focusing tonight on the health, as usual, alternative medicine, looking at past life therapy and understanding how that we can use that to support ourselves in this life. Now, whether you believe in this or not, it is kind of, as we usually do here, explorations and opening the mind up and understanding that, consider the possibility and understand how we can use it to support ourselves now in this time as we move through on our journeys, healing journeys, or whatever journeys that we are moving through. So we're going to do that and take a look at reincarnation a little bit. We have Stephen Sekularius in the house with us again tonight. He joined us last year sometime, and we introduced reincarnation, and he put together a wonderful documentary documenting many cases of this. And tonight we're going to look at cross races, actually, and begin to understand how that works. We also have Dr. Paul Schenck in studio with me, past life therapist, and he's going to be sharing with us some of the work that he's doing and share his experience with us, basically. We also have a story from someone who will share firsthand her encounter with this. And so it's going to be pretty interesting. I want you to stay tuned and learn as much as you can. Open your minds, and we'll move forward from there. So tonight we're taking a look at the therapy called past life regression therapy. And I thought it would be interesting to take a look at different races within that. And so we're going to explore that tonight. We have Stephen Sekularius with us of Gold Thread Productions, who put together a wonderful documentary on reincarnation, and he was with us last year, again, for folks that are just joining us, and had documented several pieces of reincarnation, and asked him to come back and do some research, which he did a wonderful job at, getting some cases for us, cross races, and just going to talk to folks a little bit about that. And we have Dr. Paul Schenck, who's a past life regression therapist, and he is also in the studio going to share with us tonight some of his work. And we have on the line, which we're going to start with, Carol McGlinchey, who's also a past life regression therapist, trained by Dr. Brian Weiss, who has done extensive work, and we'll let her tell us a little bit more about that in that area. But let's first make sure that we can hear her on the line. Carol, are you there?
Good evening.
Good evening. Welcome to the Conscious Zone.
I'm happy to be here.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight. And we're going to go ahead and get started. But before you do, tell us a little bit about you, Carol, your journey and how it began before we get into your actual experience with this.
My journey began becoming conscious that I'd had a past life when I was 9 years old. And I had no real frame of reference for it at the time, but it always stayed with me. And then I was able to receive a regression myself around 1982, the first time. And then it just built from there. And as a result, I've dedicated my life to helping other people with this fascinating therapeutic technique to understand who they are from a much greater perspective than we think we are.
Okay, now at nine, what happened exactly?
I had a dream, and in that dream, I actually was in scene of a funeral where I was in the casket, and I was actually an African-American male slave who had died. And I saw the other African-Americans around my casket mourning me, and I didn't understand the dream, but it was very real. I was actually floating above the body and could see everything that was happening. And when I awoke in the morning, I knew it was one of those transformative dreams that I would never forget. I think many people can relate to that we have many different kinds of dreams, but some of them do point to past lives, and that's sometimes our first indication of a memory of past life.
Okay, and for folks that are joining us, we can't see you. What race are you in this life?
I'm Caucasian.
Okay.
I have freckles. I'm mainly Irish and English and Scottish and French.
All right. Okay, and so tell us about your training with Dr. Brian Weiss and who Dr. Brian Weiss is for folks who may be just tuning in for the first time.
Dr. Brian Weiss is based in Miami. He's one of our most preeminent authorities in past life regression therapists. And he was the chair of psychiatry at Mount Sinai in Miami and had a most transformative experience himself with a client, which is written about in his first book, Many Lives, Many Masters. And now he is one of our chief trainers and spokespersons throughout the world to help people understand this fascinating modality, and I trained with him in 1998.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the training and, what that entails, how long you did that, and then we'll get into your actual experience.
Well, there's many different approaches and different people who do train, but Dr. Weiss has a training with people who already have an extensive background in psychotherapeutic fields, where he shows us the concept and how to create a relaxed state of mind for people through a regression technique where they can access their subconscious memory, and then we as facilitators understand how to follow their story and see how their past life experience can impact the present lifetime, both the physical, emotional experiences that transpire as well as the attitudes that are carried over, and how they can benefit or actually feel negative in a present lifetime. And then as trained therapists, people come from different types of therapeutic backgrounds who train to be past life regression therapists. We can help facilitate healing through this method. And Dr. Weiss has a certain way to train, and there are other people in the field also training people.
Okay, we're going to turn now just for a moment so that we can bring in Stephen and Dr. Schenck before we continue with your story, just so the folks can hear their voices and associate the voices with the names. Stephen Sakellarius of Gold Thread Productions want to welcome you to the Conscious Zone.
Thank you, Asha.
Thanks so much for being back with us and for doing all the research that you did to help us to document this topic tonight in the form of radio. We appreciate you. And Dr. Paul Schenck, want to welcome you as well to the Conscious Zone.
Good evening, Asha.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Stephen, what are the benefits of someone even considering the possibility of reincarnation in your mind, and why you are, you know, put together the documentary you put together, and why you're doing this work in your mind?
The more that I look into it, the more that I feel that reincarnation is very much a part of our daily life, and many things that are inexplicable to people. They don't understand why they have this sudden illness. They don't understand why this relationship suddenly develops, why it goes wrong. Many aspects of our lives, why we suddenly feel this tremendous urge to pursue some line of work or some avocation. All of these things, we're really experiencing and living our past lives now. We just don't know it. So it's really a matter of expanding our awareness to add this other dimension to where we suddenly start to see it everywhere. We see it everywhere in our lives and other people's lives. It's right here in front of us. And I think that's the kernel of what I really want to convey to people.
Okay. And Dr. Schenck, if you'd share with us as well, you've been doing this for quite some time. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you came to be doing this work.
It started about 18 years ago with a film, and I'm lousy at remembering names, Shirley MacLaine, Out on a Limb. And in that, she mentions reincarnation. So I went out and did some reading, Edith Fiore's book, You've Been Here Before, then began experimenting with some of my clients who were open to the question of reincarnation. I've been using hypnosis for a number of years in my practice and found it was very easy to incorporate past life imagery into that. And I piggyback on what Steve says. If you think about all the different jobs you've had, and in each company that you worked for, you were part of the organizational chart. But to understand all of your skills and your liabilities today, you can't just look at who you are in the current company. You want to look at all of the skills that you acquired and maybe even some injuries that happened in those earlier jobs. Current life is like one of those organizational charts. And if you go back across other lifetimes and look at those as other companies that you work for, you can begin to see that if you connect the lines between each of those lifetimes, you can see how your current skills and your current fears, perhaps, can have some of their roots in other lifetimes. And past life therapy is simply a way of looking at the idea that our souls are able to access that information.
Okay. And I know there are several different ways Stephen spoke about that you do. You're using hypnosis, or are you using the Gestalt approaches, or what are you using to...
In a sense, whenever someone goes inside, if they're reminiscing, if they're having a daydream, they are in a kind of hypnotic state, self-induced. The therapist is simply helping facilitate that and then guiding where the imagery goes next. So
okay.
Brian Weiss's famous study with Catherine, where she had a fear of choking, and he looked at all sorts of current life experiences going back to age 3, didn't resolve it. So he says to her one day, go back to the origins of this problem. and she winds up a couple thousand years ago, I believe it was in Egypt, where she's holding her daughter and a tidal wave comes and drowns them both. And immediately following that, her fears of choking finally subside. And she'd been in 18 months of intensive psychotherapy before that with no change in the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter, and Dr. Weiss himself talks about this, as do other writers, doesn't matter whether you believe that this was really a past life that you've accessed or if it was just good fiction from your brain. The changes are the same. So for those who are saying, it's impossible, can't be, God only has us live one lifetime, what I propose to them is then look at these as dreams that your brain gives you while you're talking with the therapist. And people have them spontaneously just as well. They can be messages from your own mind designed to help you solve a problem.
Okay. All right. We'll turn back to Carol now for a moment. Carol, why don't you tell us give us the experience that you were having in the first time that you were working with Dr. Weiss or in this therapy where you began to expound upon the dream that you had earlier when you were 9 and share with us that story.
Well, the journey began actually back in 1982 with my first regression. Because this lived in me so much, I sought out someone. Back then, it was hard to find someone to do past life work, but I did find someone who successfully helped me to regress and remember from that slave lifetime, and that was the beginning of it. And over time, then I also worked with Dr. Weiss and other students who were training with him to get, because what's nice about this work is it builds from one session to the next. Just like we have many, many moments in this lifetime if we're to tell our life story, the same way with past life work, you don't find it all in one session. You go back and you keep remembering various incidents throughout the lifetime. It's like a beautiful story that's told, and that's how it came to me through several different regressions.
And you were
able to piece together the whole lifetime.
What is the furthest back that someone has gone in your practice?
In my practice, I've actually had people go back to cave lifetimes, like cavemen lifetimes, when we were very primitive early man. I've had several clients do that.
Dr. Schenk? Oh.
Yes, one in particular that went back to a time that felt as if it was at least 500 B.C. or so in terms of just the way people were acting. Very little in the way of thinking so much as just basic life experiences, living, getting food, being safe.
Survival mode.
Survival mm-hmm. mode.
Okay. And Stephen, how far back have you documented, in any of your documentaries, maybe how far back some of the research that you've done goes?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, for the documentary itself, there's only a couple cases represented in there,
okay.
And they don't go back all that far, maybe, 100 years or a couple hundred years.
Okay.
But, of course, I've read a number of cases where it goes back much, much further.
Okay. All right, well, Carol, share with us some of the experience in the therapy.
In my own personal?
Yes, yes.
This particular lifetime as an African-American slave?
Yes.
This one was the most prominent for me, and I think that other people will find this too as they're listening, that when we have dreams and we have memories, we resonate with a certain time period or a certain culture. And for me, this lifetime just seemed to have the most meaning for me. And what I discovered was that I had come from Africa as a very infant, actually, and grew up in Virginia and was sold to different plantations throughout my lifetime. But what I learned from doing this was that it's not the circumstances that determine our life, but our attitude and how our soul develops through that lifetime. And I discovered that that lifetime was actually a very rich and enriching lifetime where I actually had a good attitude. I wasn't bitter or resentful because I had been enslaved. I had very nurturing relationships with many people, and I actually have reconnected with 5 different people from that lifetime. So that was very astonishing to me, to realize that it isn't so much the circumstances, but how we meet them, how our soul meets the challenges that it's chosen to have, that creates who we are in the present life.
And you said that you've reconnected with 5,
mm-hmm.
and how tell us about that.
Well, when you're doing this therapy, it's a pretty amazing process where when you are in the story or the regression, you can just sense, even though the person is in a different body, in a different race, perhaps a different sex, you recognize them, and you recognize them as who they are in the present lifetime as well. It's just a feeling and a knowing, and And that happened to me through the different regressions, where I would see that my wife in that past lifetime was now a very dear friend, my godmother in this lifetime, my daughter in that lifetime was my daughter now, my son in that lifetime was my father in this lifetime, and my mother in that slave lifetime is a friend I met here, and we recognize each other instantly. I'm sure that people who are listening, many people have also felt that sense of knowing and recognizing. And it's a very comforting feeling, actually, to know that even though we may have died and had to leave loved ones in the past, that we're able to reunite with them, and we'll reunite with them again.
Okay. Talk about, if you would, what do you feel the biggest benefit of the therapy and the experiences has been for you?
I think first and foremost is a deep sense of compassion, first of all for oneself and one's own journey and for others, an ability to forgive, an ability to love all of humankind, recognizing that we've been from different races, male, female, rich, poor, victim, victimizer, you know, in wars, and that you just begin to develop a greater self-acceptance as well as deep understanding for the human condition. And that, to me, brings a lot of inner peace, because I may not be able to control world politics or what's happening now, but I can control my inner journey, my inner life, and find that inner peace in the midst of whatever the circumstances are around me. And certainly, my slave lifetime was the greatest illustration of that, that what astonished me was I think I had a better attitude even in that lifetime than I do now. In this lifetime, I tend to be a bit of a grumbler, maybe a little negative or critical. And yet, there, as that African-American male slave, as I think it was Dr. Schenck was mentioning, back that people were living in a more physical way. They weren't so much in an intellectual or mental way. And I had this quiet appreciation of life and of deep appreciation for those I loved and who loved me. So now I find that no matter what's happening externally, I always have that inner reassurance that all is well, and that I'm responsible for my own life, my own reactions, my own attitudes, my relationships, and that's been very gratifying. And also to be reunited with those people that were also part of my soul group of loved ones back then.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like you actually were able to retain more of the positive of the experience, but I think I remember reading you experienced negative as well in that slave lifetime.
Yes, in observing how slaves were treated, is that what you're referring
yes.
to? Yes, and that, of course, was very, very hard to understand because I observed it as a child, and it was hard to make sense of. But as I grew through that lifetime, I came to terms with the situation and who I was, and I was fortunate that later on in life, I was able to live in a kind of a indentured servant kind of situation with a family where it wasn't a cruel slave master.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Dr. Schenck, how often have you seen this in your practice, the cross-race, and is there anything that stands out for you?
It occurs fairly regularly. You'll see it in cross-ethnic groups. Someone who is Christian in their identity in this lifetime has a past life experience in which they're Jewish, or one of the other Eastern faiths. Had one where the woman actually went back and saw herself as an animal, a black panther, and her partner, and she would hunt by mental telepathy. So it appears that souls are able to experience all sorts of options. And the ethnic changes, the gender changes are all part of that. It's as if the soul seems to say, okay, I want a particular experience. And the easiest way to do that is to have these features. So in two lifetimes, I've had folks tell me that I was born blind because that would facilitate the lessons that I wanted to experience and learn. And vision would have gotten in the way of that. So it shows up fairly regularly, and sometimes in the most surprising ways. A woman who in this lifetime is very assertive had a lifetime in which she was the wife of an Oriental businessman, and in her capacity as his wife, she did the entertaining and had the classic oriental position of waiting to be told what to do next. And I was waiting for her to be livid. No way am I going to be this man's wife and have to just sit by and wait. She loved it. She was totally at peace, felt completely respected, had no qualms about the role in that particular lifetime. And I was the one who had to do the work to back off, because I kept looking for the conflict that she would experience. Mm-hmm. And actually, she was very, very much at peace with it. And I think it helped her broaden her understanding that being female doesn't have to necessarily fit a very tight model of being assertive and not taking any guff from anybody. It's that internal experience that Carol was talking about that can transform it completely.
Mm. I'd love to add something to that.
Yes,
too,
go ahead.
How much I enjoy being in a man's body.
Really? And why is that?
To see, and because as a slave I was very physical, whereas I'm a very intellectual, mental person now, more highly educated. I was a farmer, you know, and or what we call a field hand in those days, and I enjoyed using my muscles and being physical, and also just in terms of sexuality, feeling what it was like for a male to experience his sexuality and relate to a female. It helps me to be more compassionate and understanding to men and their vulnerability in their sexual intimacy, and that alone is therapeutic for people who feel like we only can understand life from one perspective, either mm-hmm. male or female.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's just very healing to be able to see life from a different perspective than the one that you have now.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, we experience that in the most subtle ways each and every day, just speaking with people and learning more about their perspectives. It can be healing just in the dialogue. So to actually for there to be the possibility of you actually experiencing another lifetime, different races, different genders, I could see how that would definitely open your eyes a bit. Stephen, anything you'd like to add?
Well, I'm not hearing Carol, so I can't.
Oh, that's right. I'm so sorry about that. We were hoping to have another one of those available. But in general, you've looked at a few cases. Maybe you could pick another one out of the cross races, and then we'll take a break and come back and do that so that you can pick one.
Sure.
And then we'll come back and talk more about the therapy itself with Dr. Schenk and Carol. So if you're just joining us, you have entered the conscious zone, and we are speaking about past life regression therapy, reincarnation across the races, and how that therapy can begin to heal different experiences that we're having in this life and support our bodies as well. So we will be continuing with that. We have Carol McGlinchey on the line, past life regression therapist. We have Dr. Paul Schenk in studio, as well as Stephen Sekularius of Golden Thread Productions. So we'll be back. Stay with us. You've entered the conscious zone. Okay, well, let's continue. All right, you were giving some examples of some of the benefits and some of the actual experiences of people benefiting from the therapy. Why don't we go to Dr. Schenk, and we'll do the same. Can you hear us?
There are a variety of things that show up. I love the music in the background. It provide that trance-inducing way.
Nice
instrumental. It's really good.
The conscious zone.
You get people who come in with things ranging from a very specific phobia, like Carol was talking about just a minute ago, of a fear of heights, a fear of enclosed spaces, or there may be a physical symptom. A client of mine who came in with chronic left shoulder pain and what seemed unrelated, a fear of heights, and wound up with a past life memory as an American Indian, cross-cultural there, where the Indian one day was on a high ledge and the earth gave way and he fell to his death. As she looked down at the Indian's body, what she saw was that the left shoulder was horribly dislocated. Following that session, both of those disappeared. Her fear of heights disappeared, and the left shoulder pain disappeared. Or you may see personality issues like jealousy, anger, like you were reading a couple minutes ago. Those tend to take longer to work through because they tended to be lifelong issues from another lifetime or perhaps even multiple lifetimes. And working through those takes more time than just one or two sessions. So I don't want to oversell what this therapy can do, but the impact can nonetheless be quite profound if people will stick with it.
Okay. All right. Stephen, do you have a story there you can read? Have you been picked out for us?
I do have a couple picked out, and specifically I want to address the issue of whether these memories are real. And I have a foot in both camps because I have a background in counseling, a master's in counseling, which I haven't used professionally, but I have the training. And I'm also a documentarian, so in that sense I'm also a researcher. So I know that in therapy, this therapy works whether you believe it or not, because the emotional power is there and it works. But I'm also concerned about the issue of, is it real, is it not real? So I brought a couple cases that contain elements of what's called xenoglossy, and xenoglossy is a situation where a person begins to speak in a language that they would have no normal way of knowing. It's a language they knew in a previous life, and it comes up sometimes in conjunction with the therapy or sometimes in conjunction with a past life memory, and I've got a couple cases that delve into that and are also cross-cultural and cross-race. So this woman writes, she says, "My mother's niece was a journalist for the first Dutch paper for immigrants in Canada. This must have been in the 50s or 60s. She had to be operated on, and right after her operation, she spoke Chinese with her doctor. A few days later, that doctor came back to see how she was doing and addressed her in Chinese. She was very surprised that the doctor spoke Chinese to her, and she said, 'But doctor, I'm a Dutch Canadian. I do not speak Chinese.' And he says, 'You did a few days ago.'" So, you know, and it's not the kind of language you could just fake, you know.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, if you don't know it.
Okay.
So here we have a little bit longer story, and I'll run through it, but this has a similar aspect to it. And many of these memories are traumatic, especially the ones that surface by themselves tend to be of some trauma from the previous life, and very often the death of the previous life is pretty common. It's not the only type that can surface, but very many of these are. And this person writes, "At the age of 4, I had a remembrance that was very complete." Now, this is a child. This is a memory coming up as a child. It's not in therapy.
Okay.
"I remembered that I was a German soldier in the First World War and that I was guarding an area near the front lines. I left my post and went to the tents that we were staying in, and suddenly I was knocked off my feet in a brilliant flash of light and an intense but short-lived pain. I remember awakening in a hospital gurney and a doctor looking over my leg. He was about to amputate and had already put the saw through a portion of the flesh when I screamed that he was not to take my leg. I begged him not to take my leg and willed that it would not be so. Though I was not paying attention to it, the sounds of war were all around us." This is a 4-year-old. "And as I was praying not to lose my leg, the tent was hit directly by a bomb, and all I knew then was light." And he goes on, he says, "This incident had many interesting after effects on my 4-year-old mind. In this lifetime, from the age of 5 through 8, I was raised in a Jewish home. And at the time of this remembrance, I was staying with my Jewish aunt. My mother was raised in a Hebrew home, having been adopted by a Hebrew family in rural Manitoba, friends of her estranged father. From that point on, for about 2 years, I could speak fluent German with my Aunt Effie, which was quite shocking to the rest of the family. It became unused and eventually lost as I grew older, even though many phrases became quite clear." And they went on to talk about how he was very grown up and intelligent for his age and so on. So we're apparently dealing with something real, and Dr. Ian Stevenson, especially in his book Where Biology and Reincarnation Intersect, has studied this, and what he's documented cases, just, I mean, briefly, he's gone into them, but just to briefly describe a typical case, somebody would have these memories, the memories would be verified, and then he would find the previous person's police report and autopsy report, and this person would have the person in this life would have scars or wounds or physical deformities, and they would correspond almost exactly to the autopsy report of the previous personality that they'd identified. So not necessarily all of these memories are real, but definitely, in my opinion, some of them are real. It's not, can't just be imagination.
Okay. All right, well, Carol, are you there? Okay. We are going to open the phone lines up here for listeners to call in, so we will let you go. But before we do, want to ask you anything particular important that you'd like to get out to the listeners before you leave us.
Well, I'd like to share from Dr. Weiss what he states as the goal of this work is, and that's inner peace, understanding, and joy. That's ultimately what we're all seeking. And this is one way to achieve that, through a greater understanding of herself and all of humanity.
Right. Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate you being here in the Conscious Zone with us and sharing your story with us tonight, and appreciate your time. So we will have to have you back again sometime. We want you to take care, okay?
It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks very much, Carol. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Wanted to touch on the therapy itself, Dr. Schenck, and also I want to let listeners know the number to call is 404-523-8989 if you'd like to share any of your stories with us, questions or comments on the subject. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 404-523-8989. At our next break, we'll take some calls. So 404-523-8989, give us a call here. Wanted to talk about the therapy itself and just helping us understand how it's done and what actually takes place during a session in terms of maybe words that you're saying, or how does it actually work?
There are many, many different ways that one can get started with this, ranging from something as simple as imagine that you're in a wonderful, safe, easy place. Many people have memories of being at the beach, for example. And imagine that there on the beach you have become something like a kite, and with your physical body safely anchored there on the beach, you spread your angel wings and lift up on a breeze and float up above the beach, up to the clouds, and perhaps are accompanied by a guide. It might be a seagull, might be another bird, or just a sense of a presence. And as you journey across the landscape, your mind and soul can carry you to a place and time that has a story, perhaps real, perhaps just one made up by your mind, that will contain information that's just right for you right now, timely, useful, and constructive. And as the person drifts across the landscape, eventually they get to another place where they settle down, much like what a helicopter would, or just coming down close to the earth. And one of the amazing things is that without even suggesting it, they have moved into a different physical body.
Well, let me tell you, I was going somewhere as you were talking. And I'm thinking, okay, there's people driving out there, Dr. Schenck, be careful.
Yeah, if you're in your car, wait and do this when you're pulled over to a parking lot somewhere when you get home.
Okay, all right.
Because these images are that easy to create. And most people the very first time will say, how do I know I'm not just making it up? And the answer is, on the one hand, you don't. But if you think about it, where was your last thought just before it became conscious? We think about, well, gee, for breakfast tomorrow, oh, I've run out of milk. I need to pick up some on the way home. So where was that thought just before it popped into my brain? My conscious mind didn't think of it. It came up fully formed. So these stories, maybe they're just fiction. But if they are, perhaps it's the highest level of your mind or soul that's saying, okay, if I can get your attention this way, then I'll present it as if it's a waking dream, like a nighttime dream, but wide awake, where you're in it emotionally. But the fascinating thing is that people are never themselves in these stories. They always become someone else.
Okay.
Sometimes different gender, and they'll pick up the story at some point in that life, perhaps as a child, maybe as an adult. Doesn't matter where, because like the video remote control device, you can move forwards and backwards in the story to the next significant scene or back to understand more of the history.
Okay, and so you take them back this way, and usually people come in with a particular issue that they want to work through?
Many come in with a specific issue. Sometimes I'll get someone who's read Dr. Weiss's books and I say, okay, I'm ready to find out about a soulmate. And as Carol talked earlier, one of the things that those of us who do this work have discovered, and I suspect, Steve, you'd agree from your research, that soulmates are perhaps overrated in that sense of the one person. Because what seems to happen is that souls travel together in groups much like classmates in school.
A soul family.
Right. And you'll encounter many of those souls in multiple lifetimes in various combinations. So as Carol suggested, one time your current spouse might be a child in another lifetime. The genders might be reversed. A good friend in this lifetime might be someone who was a family member in another lifetime. And there's that sense of recognition, because like classmates traveling together through high school or through college, you recognize them from physics class or an English lit class, and you have that prior history with them that you can build on. If you're together again, it's because it's a good fit for both of you. So when I get a couple that is together and having a lot of trouble with how they deal with being angry, my explanation to them is, I wonder if at a soul level you signed up for this because you'd be really good lab mates. You'd both get some real good practice at how to find other ways to deal with anger and the issues that that's about.
Okay.
Part of the most important work I find in this is to take the person in that other lifetime experience through the physical death. And it's important to understand that the client never goes through cardiac distress or respiratory distress when this happens. This is done in a way where there's no risk for physical harm to the current body.
Because of the state that they're in?
In the same way that in a dream you can go through all sorts of amazing things.
Uh-huh.
In this one, if someone, for example, is in a war zone and like the bright light, the flash of light, you can have them fast forward over the scene.
Uh-huh.
Just like you would with a remote control device.
Okay.
You can have it freeze frame and look at it third person. There are all sorts of strategies that therapists use to make sure the client remains comfortable with it.
Interesting.
And if you've ever read some of the near-death experience literature where the person goes through, say, a cardiac arrest, they have a heart attack and are literally dead for a few moments, they float up out of their body. Same thing happens in past life work. In the body of the other person, after it is physically dead, the client has the experience of floating up out of the body, surrounded typically by the light, oftentimes with the presence of one or more guides or relatives that deceased them before then in that lifetime. And you do the life review. You take a look at, well, what you learn.
Okay, so that is the reason you take them through that physical death again.
Right.
Okay.
You take a look at what they learned. And if it was a traumatic death where in the midst of the death they go, I'll never love again or I'll never be loved again, you have them take a look at that and go, did you mean that for all lifetimes? Or was that just a painful final thought in that lifetime? And I'll have the client in their own sense of self now, say a 45-year-old woman, dialogue with who they were in that other lifetime. Say, hey, would it be okay with you if we reworked that? So the Indian who fell to his death talked with the woman who was my client in this imaginary dialogue, or perhaps real dialogue, take your pick. And he said, no, gee, I didn't mean for you to carry forward the physical pain of that shoulder injury. Now that you understand the message to be careful if you're walking on a ledge, you can carry that wisdom in your soul instead of in your shoulder. So he used the image of a gold and silver net, like a fish net, that he swept through her body to remove that old pain. So the healing takes place physically, emotionally, and in your thinking patterns, your belief patterns.
Okay. All right. If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Dr. Schenk and Stephen Sakellarius, and we're exploring past life regression, reincarnation across the races, and learning a little bit more about that and how this therapy can heal us in our minds and our bodies and our spirits. We're going to take some calls here. The number is 404-523-8989, comments, or we'll share your experiences, questions. Just do it. Call us 404-523-8989, and we'll be on by for your call. Stay with us. You've entered the conscious zone. Carl, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you for joining us in the conscious zone. Go ahead with your question. You're live.
Yes, I would like to know how does the doctor accurately pinpoint these, past life experiences?
Okay, is that clear enough for you, Doctor?
Yeah, if I'm understanding your question, the process is surprisingly simple. Brian Weiss offers a lovely example of it when he talks about his work with Catherine, where he simply asks her to go back to the origin of the problem. And you're trusting that the soul, or as I often call it, the higher self, knows exactly where to go to be able to access the origins of that particular issue. Sometimes there are multiple origins. There may be multiple events in a given lifetime, or there may be a similar event that occurred in different lifetimes. So it may be a multi-stage process. But it's a matter of trusting that the mind and soul know where to go to find the source of the problem. Same way that if you go out on Google and do a search for a particular phrase, you can trust that Google will somehow get you where you need to go.
Okay. Carl, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Does that answer your question? Do you have another question?
I have like a second part to my question.
Okay, go ahead.
It's no coincidence, but this time yesterday I was on the internet and it said look up your past life experiences. And I went into it and put my information in or whatever, and it told me I was Asian. but now I'm a black person, you know, and it said that I was a woman, and I still carry some of the traits from that lifetime. I wanted to know if you could pinpoint something for me. I don't know.
Can you shed any light on that, or maybe he should contact you?
I don't know the website that he went to that was able to ostensibly present who he was without asking him any questions. My own experience is that one of the things I like about this work is that I stay out of it, that what I'm doing is simply helping the client get into that internal place where their own mind does the work, so that instead of my imposing my own belief system on it, I can step back and let the imagery begin to emerge and trust that whatever the emotional issue is that the client's working on now, whether it's anger or fear or phobia, for example, that there's a bridge between their current life experience and if the origins of that are from a different lifetime, it's like going across a bridge over a river, that their soul will guide them across time and space to the place that carries the information they're looking for. And then I'm simply waiting for it to emerge instead of my telling them what's there.
Paul, let me add real quick that I think that it's already something that's already inside you. At some level, you already know. So when it comes to you, you'll feel that it's familiar. You know, like, for example, we were playing a little bit of American Indian, Native American chanting. And I'll tell you, I know I've heard that before. I feel it, you know. So that's why I'm saying it's always with us. So it's just a mess. It's like a radio station, you know. The radio station is always there, but you have to tune in. And when you tune in, you know, bang, right there.
Yeah.
So you'll feel it, yeah.
Okay, caller. Any more questions?
No, I think he's put me in a clear perspective.
Okay.
As far as past life goes, just dealing with the familiarities of things you come in contact with. Because I have a lot of deja vu.
Well, I'm curious, when you got the information about being Asian before and some of the other details that you got, did any of it make sense to you?
Yeah, some of it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
It said that, you know, I have a gift for, you know, just putting up with things that I might not, you know, an average person might not be able to put up with.
Okay.
And it said I was like, some Japanese man's wife or something, they had some type of custom over there. And, you know, you just had to be a humble way of some sort. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Schenk was talking about that a little bit earlier, something like that. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, caller. Again, the number is 404-523-8989. Thank you for joining us in the Conscious Zone. Keep listening. Okay. Any comments on any of that? Does that bring up anything for either of you?
There's a sense in this work of all the therapy that I've done for 25 years, this kind of work I find is some of the most profound. It's not particularly religious, although occasionally religious labels or terms will come up, but it tends to be quite spiritual. And as Steve was saying, when something hits, you just know that it's true. There are moments that I've experienced where there's a sense of whether I call them my spirit guides or the divine or God. In Christian terms, I could put it as Mother Mary or the Christ consciousness being present, and a sense of simply being wrapped up in that love in a way that knocks your socks off. And when it hits, you can go, what is this? But you know something is happening, and it feels so good.
Mm.
It feels so good.
Now, talk about the guides. First, Stephen, talk about scripting. What is that exactly?
Well, scripting is an idea that's come in with the third wave of psychology, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's been around for a while that psychology has known that people have these life scripts and that they seem to follow them. Some of them are destructive, and the script would be something like, I'm not supposed to exist, I shouldn't exist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They get that feeling, and they play it out, you know, to a destructive end. And some people can have positive scripts, you know, I'm going to succeed, you know, no matter what, I'm going to succeed. But they don't know where they come from. And when you bring past lives into it and bring past life therapy into it, you start to see where these scripts are coming from and that they're real, you know, and that they've been with you for one, two, three, however many lifetimes back, and that they've had a history, they've had a progression. It's a story. It's an unfolding story. And when we only look at one lifetime, it's like picking up one chapter out of the middle of the book. Mm-hmm. You can't get mm-hmm. the whole story. Mm-hmm. When you start to put all the chapters together, suddenly the whole book starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons, I guess, that you work so hard to open the minds of folks and say, consider the possibility that there is more than one lifetime, because once you do, then a whole world of other things open up for you. I was speaking with some friends the other day, and we were talking about issues with our parents, and it just so happened that they were part of a group a religious group that does believe in reincarnation, and so it seemed that just kind of would take the whole that would just shift us in a whole other different direction. Because now it's, okay, all right, well, if I chose my parents and all these other things, and they're absolutely perfect in what they did and what I'm supposed to learn here. But without that possibility, then you're just kind of stuck.
Yeah, in a one-life model, the notion is you have to be good enough, kind of like a pass-fail system. You know, C+, C-, you're still going to make it to heaven if your religious beliefs include heaven. As soon as you include the possibility of reincarnation, then, for me, it's like a model of going to school. You learn a lot in kindergarten, but you don't learn everything. And souls seem to come back to planet Earth as a place to get more experiences to help them make even better and better decisions. As a partially reformed perfectionist myself, when I shifted from a one-life model to the idea that we get to do this perhaps hundreds of lifetimes, it really took some pressure off for me. I don't have to be perfect before I die. It's okay. I can come back next time and pick up wherever I left off. But it also means that I don't get away with cutting corners. If I am a mean SOB in this lifetime, and I tip the scales that way, I'm probably going to come back in another lifetime and experience the other end of the seesaw. So whatever I dish out in this lifetime is going to come back to me in that sense of karmic rebalancing. Mm-hmm. If I'm the perpetrator, the mean bully in this lifetime, I'll come back and experience being the victim or the martyr in another lifetime. Sometimes, as John Lennon said, you get instant karma, but sometimes it carries out across different lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything you want to add there, Steve?
Yeah, I think that this is an example of how reincarnation opens the door to some deeper subjects, because once you start to look at these lifetimes and realize that it's a learning process, then that throws you back to the whole issue of what is the purpose of life. You know, and the purpose of life turns out to be something much grander than anybody suspected.
Hmm.
And we ourselves turn out to be something much deeper than we ever suspected. So it opens the door to some much grander ideas.
Okay.
And for me, it adds an important dimension of being able to believe in God as a truly loving God. Whether people want to use a three-letter word for it, or a creator, or universal energy. Because in a one-life model, some people get away with all sorts of terrible things. And then there are those, the child who's mauled by a pit bull, or the mother of three children who dies of breast cancer when they're still young. That's not fair. There's no way that life can be seen as fair if you pay attention to the news. But if you look at the soul coming back hundreds of lifetimes, and each lifetime working on different lessons, different possibilities, then it's sort of like the semester in college when you take thermodynamics and it eats you for breakfast and lunch, and another semester you get to take some electives of photography and basket weaving. Everybody gets their chance at the easy ones, and everybody's going to get their chance at the ones that eat you for breakfast.
The challenges. Okay, I think we have another caller in line. Caller, are you there?
Yes, greetings.
All right, greetings. Thank you for entering the Conscious Zone. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Question. I'm trying to understand and experience that one has that could be related to also, we have a connection as human beings that we have a set pattern in our DNA. And what happens is that in our conception and disconnecting from our mother's womb, it is said that the placenta carries the blueprint of all human life and all the experiences, because for each individual, there has been no other way to reconnect but through the umbilical cord, and that DNA is passed on from person to person, and the right energies that can ignite or that can turn on certain memories in the person's DNA to recall certain parts of themselves in which can be considered past life experiences or things in which are already there but has to be reawakening with a certain energy that, say, from a ritual that can cause a person to
ignite that,
to experience certain experiences that are unknown to them. And hearing what you're saying with the past life experiences, and that we're all connected, and this line of life has been passed on through the same way, so we carry a blueprint of human experiences. And with that, do we actually say that they're past life, or are we reawakening that which is already within?
It's a very good argument.
Mm-hmm.
That is sometimes used to say there's no such thing as past lives. What you're really doing is picking up on one of your ancestors' past lives. And that's a possibility, but it doesn't explain some of the 20,000 cases that Ian Stevenson has researched, where there is absolutely no genetic link, where the child in one lifetime is saying, yeah, I was a 42-year-old man who died married with three children, and there's no genetic link. And Ian Stevenson and his crew go out and research and find the 42-year-old deceased body, and the child is introduced to a group of people, some of whom are relatives and some of whom are strangers. He's never met any of them. And he goes over and meets all of his relatives by their nicknames on a first encounter. There's no genetic history there to explain that. So
okay.
Genetic history can be part of it, but it doesn't explain the other cases.
Okay, when you're saying genetically connected, but what I'm saying is that from the first conception of life, there's always a connection, because there's no different method in which we are brought forth from the womb. So there's a connection to all human life in the same way that the process is made through the woman, and her placenta, in essence, carries all of the micro DNAs of what's been passed on from the first conception. Am I trying to overstand where I'm coming from with that?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And in the rituals, it's like when we do certain rituals that can activate, or you can have a certain aroma that can activate certain energies within you to cause that to activate and bring forth that which is already there.
Right, I agree with you, and I've had that experience, and I've talked to people who had that experience, a ritual, a smell, a sound, an object, you know, that can trigger these things. And I think it's a both and, it's not an either or, but I think that there are levels. In the mystical literature, you'll see the dictum that says, as above, so below, and the way that the universe is portrayed is that it's a series of reflecting levels, that you at the, you know, you have each level reflects the one below it, and so you'll see the same thing. So at the physical level, you have the DNA, you have the physical connection, you know, but there's another level above that where you'll see the same kinds of things, and each level affects the one below. So it's true, but there's also a psychic level above the physical level where the connections are also true. That would be my point of view.
Yeah, and saying that, it's just like it says, everything in the universe is within you.
Mm-hmm.
Why not use yourself?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And in that connection of universal and cosmic energy, which we are, that reactivation of, like they're saying now, that sound waves that are still traveling through space.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so eventually they're going to make a travel to the end and make their way back.
Right.
Everything has a beginning and an end. So in the transformation of that energy, leaving this realm and going into another and coming back, because the universe is endless, but it begins at a point.
Mm-hmm. But the universe is not only physical, I would say. That would be what I would add into it.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
That it's from the physical, we're not totally.
Mm-hmm.
There's an energy
mm-hmm.
that
right.
we vibrate on.
Right.
And in that vibration, certain other elements is an experience of being in the sweat. And the grandfather stones, which are the oldest mineral or thing of the earth, to have an experience where the stone is so heated that it activates and causes you to travel to a time beyond what you can even fathom.
Mm-hmm.
Because I heard you say about the woman who in Kemet realized that she had drowned from a tidal wave with her child.
Yes.
So that point of time, something reactivated that person to conceive where they had been in the universe.
If you want some interesting reading on this subject, Gail Ferguson wrote a fascinating book called Cracking the Intuition Code, in which she describes seven different kinds of intuition. Most of us grow up being taught about the basic five senses, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. But there are those of us who think that there are three more, intuition being one of them, the geomagnetic sense of direction, like homing pigeons, being another, and then those transcendental experiences, the aha things, where life suddenly changes. Intuition is another way of knowing, and I oftentimes invite my clients to have fun paying attention to my experience that intuition is much more trustworthy than any of the other senses. Think about what a magician does, where you know what you're seeing isn't really happening, but your eyes tell you it is. But intuition, I find, is much more reliable, and yet we know that intuitive experiences don't follow any of the rules of sight, sound, and touch.
Right. There's a part in which can be overstood if you understanding or have an understanding of that which you are. As I said, everything in the universe is within. Use yourself. And when you overstand yourself, that means the physical, the spiritual, and the soul. We're just a vibration that has been slowed down. We're energy compacted into a time for now.
Okay.
And it resonates and goes, like I tell people, you can stand on the earth barefooted, and the energy that runs through the earth runs through your body back into the universe, and there's a cycle in which it travels, and in certain points that you can find that there's vortexes and there are spaces in which you reactivate that which you are, like the Bermuda Triangle.
Right. And it's part of what's fascinating about this for me is that there was a time 10, 15, 20 years ago when this kind of conversation would have produced the Twilight Zone sound, doo-doo-doo-doo. But now there are researchers out there that are beginning to do some phenomenal things. Gary Schwartz has been able to measure how we pick up vibes from other people. So I like what you're onto. I think it's part of why souls choose to come here to planet Earth as a place to experience all of that, and appreciate your comments.
Thank you, caller. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back, and we'll close out, get some information, and then we'll close out and make room for Maptime Jazz with Wanik Shabazz. You've entered the Conscious Zone. This is Aja, and we will be shortly closing out of the Conscious Zone and moving into Maptime Jazz with Wanik Shabazz at midnight. And before we do that, I wanted to ask Dr. Schenk and Stephen to Secularius to give out any contact information for folks who want to learn more and follow up. Stephen?
Well, my website is www.ial.goldthread.com. IAL.goldthread.com. And I also want to thank the International Association for Regression Research and Therapies, IARRT, because they are the organization through whom these two therapists came to me. And they're also a good referral source if you want to try to find a past life therapist in your area and know that they're credentialed and know what their credentials are. You can contact this organization at their website, www.iarrt.org, and they have a service where they will give you a list of therapists in your area. So, and I did want to mention that I highly recommend if you do want to go in for this kind of therapy, get a qualified person to help you with it.
Just as there's an adage that only a fool represents himself in court instead of hiring an attorney, past life therapy experiences can happen spontaneously, but I wouldn't recommend it
unless you feel comfortable with what might come up, because as you've heard tonight, some of the things that happen in these memories are quite unpleasant. And doing those first few, at least the first few, with somebody who can help guide you more safely and comfortably through that can really keep your anxiety down and help it be a therapeutic experience and not simply a flashback that can be traumatizing in its own right.
Okay, and your contact information, Dr. Schenk?
My website is www.dr, like doctor, then no period, my first name Paul, last name Schenk, S-C-H-E-N-K.com. There are a couple of articles on the website that deal with different ways of looking at past life therapy, along with a book that I've written called Near-Death Experiences Without the Flatlines, subtitled You Don't Have to Die to See the Light. So people are welcome to drop in there.
Right.
There are other contact sites listed on the website for places like IARRT.org and the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis.
Okay, talk briefly. We started to talk about it. I asked about it. How do you incorporate the guides in this work?
They make wonderful co-therapists.
Who are guides for people who may be just hearing this stuff for the first time?
In religious terms, I would look at them as those who are the wise beings that are available to us from the light. You can look at them as guardian angels. You can look at them as patron saints. You can look at them as variations of the Holy Spirit. In more layman's terms, they are souls that seem to have progressed far enough that they can now become mentors for each of us. And every one of us has them. The more stuff you're going through, the more you're dealing with, the more guides you have available to help you.
How do you identify them in a session?
It's part of that intuitive process. If you feel really safe with them, if you find that the answers you're getting really feel safe, and you have no sense of danger with them, those are all good clues. Every once in a while, I've had someone who's accessed an energy, a being from somewhere that was of the darker variety. It's like, don't want you messing around with that. Kind of like hanging around the wrong part of town late at night.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't feel clean, doesn't feel safe.
And how do you move out of that quickly?
That's part of why you want to do it with a good therapist.
Uh-huh.
In lay terms, certainly invoke whatever you understand religiously.
Mm-hmm.
Invoke the Christ consciousness, invoke the Holy Spirit, invoke your understanding of God to keep you safe. But it's part of why it can be useful to do this with someone who's had some experience with those infrequent but occasional occurrences that you really don't want to mess with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any last words for folks before we close out?
I think we've said it.
I think you've said much tonight. A lot of information we've gotten. I want to thank Carol McGritchney for calling in, and also want to thank Stephen Secularios for coordinating everyone on the show tonight and helping to actually co-produce and bring some of the information to us. And also want to thank Dr. Paul Schenk for being with us in the Conscious Zone tonight and sharing information with us. And we want to learn more, so we may do some follow-up. We definitely want to learn some more. This is a subject that you can't cover everything in one night. And so we've probably just scratched the surface here. And I want to also thank the callers out there and listeners for calling in and sharing your comments, questions, or concerns as it relates to this topic.